Marry Me a Little by Susie Carter. Read by Marianas. Garrick was late. Not precisely cause for alarm in and of itself. It could be anything. A customer lingering, a last-minute errand. Julian didn't even mind as such. Whenever Garrick kept him waiting, not for answers, mind you, not for explanations, not for anything important, but in little ways, in the ways in which Garrick hadn't meant to keep him waiting, Garrick was always so solicitous about it, warm and charming and terribly apologetic. It was hard to mind that, hard to mind knowing it was coming. But still, there was always the chance that it was something else. There was always the chance that Garrick's shop had exploded again, or another Flaxian had tried to poison him, or who knew what. Julian sat at the table and felt his shoulders stringing themselves tight, and told himself not to be foolish. He was the ranking medical officer. If anything had happened, he'd be called right away. So the chances that he was sitting here doing nothing as Garrick's life drained away somewhere were really very low. He could afford to wait. Another 2 minutes. 2 minutes, and then he'd let himself get up and go, no, there. That was Garrick at last, just making his way into the replimat. Julian drew a slow breath and let it out. And then Garrick met his eyes and smiled easily, and Julian found himself suddenly certain something was horribly wrong after all. Garrick, he said, as Garrick reached the table. My dear doctor, Garrick said warmly, I do apologize. Circumstances were entirely out of my control, unfortunately. And it could have just been words, but there was a wry, bitter note in his tone that made Julian think it was truer than Garrick would have liked for it to be. Which only made sense. If it was true at all, then it was truer than Garrick would have liked for it to be, because Garrick didn't care to have much of anything happen to him that was out of his control. No, it's fine, Julian said automatically. But, Garrick, is everything all right? Captain Sisko wanted to see me, Garrick said, which was so conspicuous a refusal to answer the question Julian had asked that it almost didn't qualify as an evasion. He pulled out the chair opposite Julian and sat. Captain Sisko, why? Well, apparently, Garrick said, Cardassia has lodged a formal request with the Federation for my extradition. His voice was mild, coolly blithe. He was sitting neatly, primly upright, trim and alert, but that wasn't at all unusual for him, and there was no particular tension in his face, no shock or distress in his eyes. Julian couldn't make sense of the words for a moment, simply because they were so unexpected. And then he parsed them, understood them, and stalled out again, second-guessing himself numbly, because surely even Garrick couldn't say a thing like that with such nonchalance. What? Julian heard himself choke out at last. Yes, so it seems, Garrick said, brisk as if in agreement. I should have expected it at some point. It could just as easily have happened years ago. All it was ever going to take, after all, he added thoughtfully, was that it should be to someone's advantage somehow to have me return to Cardassia. And now, apparently, it is. Which is rather interesting. But you, what are they going to do to you? Garrick adopted a contemplative air, chin propped on his hand, eyes narrowed in a ruminative assessment of the middle distance. I imagine that depends on what they've decided they want to do to me. Cardassians are, as I'm sure you're aware, well known for our exhaustive and comprehensive approach to justice. If my shameful history of tax evasion proves itself an insufficient justification, though of course there are few worse crimes than depriving the state of its lifeblood, then I'm sure shocking new evidence of some other misdeed will be discovered in short order. They can't do that, Julian said. Not because he didn't know better than to believe it, but simply because it should have been true, damn it! It was enough to bring Garrick's gaze back to him, though, and enough that Garrick let the most aggressive of that casual opacity ease. He looked at Julian with a fond amusement that was only a little bit pitying, and said, more quietly, "Truly, Doctor, it was only a matter of time." He reached across the table and touched the back of Julian's hand with his fingertips. Do try not to trouble yourself on my account. Whatever happens to me, it can be no worse than the things I did to earn it, and to those who deserved it far less than I do. God, as if that helped at all. As if hearing him say things like that, in such a soft, grave, self-aware tone, weren't going to make it that much worse. Julian caught his breath, turned his hand over beneath Garrick's, and gripped Garrick's palm before Garrick could move away. But, Garrick, he said, helpless against the stunted, frantic feeling in his chest, a trapped wail of protest growing louder every moment between his ribs. No, this can't be happening. This can't be. Come now, be reasonable, Garrick said, almost gently. We have quite a few books left to discuss, and our remaining time in which to do so is likely to be limited. There's no point in dwelling on unpleasant facts we can't change. I'd much rather ignore this whole thing and have lunch with you. Julian had never felt less hungry in his life, but if Garrick wanted to stop talking about this and have lunch with him right now, then the least he could do was oblige. Lunch, he made himself agree, though the word scraped in his throat, and then he let go of Garrick's hand, pried himself from his chair, and went blindly to the replicator to order. He did his best, but he felt set at a distance from himself, hopelessly preoccupied, and lunch was something of a blur. He couldn't remember a word that had come out of his mouth after, nor anything Garrick had said in reply, only the tone of Garrick's voice. Only Garrick, his face, his eyes, every motion he made, every flicker of expression that passed through him as Julian asked yet another ridiculous question that inevitably betrayed that he hadn't understood a thing about the most recent chapter of the Cardassian novel he was in the middle of. It was so hard to imagine what it would be like with that chair empty. What it would feel like to sit here and eat lunch alone between shifts. Not that Garrick was the only person he ever ate with, of course, but Julian had never had a standing arrangement quite like this one, and he felt suddenly sure that he never would again, that he wouldn't be able to entertain the idea without thinking of Garrick. Would he forget, eventually, what Garrick's voice had sounded like? The particular details of the way Garrick looked at him when he'd said something particularly dense or optimistic or principled. The way Garrick explained the books, a bit at a time. The structures and the themes and the twists and turns of the plot. The motivations of the characters, as if he really did want Julian to understand them. As if he wanted Julian to understand Cardassians. As if he wanted Julian to understand him. Extradition. Extradition to Cardassia, where they might do anything to him, where he might be beaten to death or hung in a public plaza or quietly cut up into pieces in a basement somewhere, as long as it was to someone's advantage. It was unthinkable. It was unbearable. And when, at last, Garrick smiled at him and begged his pardon, claimed to have been gone from a shop far too long, Julian agreed that he needed to be on time for his afternoon shift, and left the Replimat, and then he took the turbolift straight to Ops. Captain Sisko's doors opened readily, and Sisko didn't seem particularly surprised to see him. "Doctor," he said. Julian managed, by the skin of his teeth, to wait for the doors to swish shut again behind him before he said, "Captain, I hope I'm not interrupting anything, but I... Garrick told me." Sisko sighed through his nose and sat back in his chair. "Sir, I know you aren't exactly friends with Garrick, but..." "Rest assured, I don't have to be," Sisko said before Julian could finish, "in order to recommend very strongly against throwing him to the wolves." Julian blinked. "Unfortunately, it's not up to me." Sisko's jaw tightened, and... All right, perhaps Julian should have taken a moment to actually look at him. That was the way he held himself, the steady, stubborn expression he got when he'd been officially advised of impending orders he wasn't eager to follow. "I'm told Starfleet is in a delicate position here, given the state of the war with the Dominion. No one is particularly interested in creating unnecessary tensions between any of the major powers in the Alpha Quadrant. Julian swallowed. Which refusing an extradition request for a Cardassian criminal would definitely do, he said quietly. Exactly, Sisko agreed. I tried everything I could think of, including pointing out that Garak's been living on this station through almost 5 years of Federation administration, and Starfleet might want to think twice about handing him over to the Obsidian Order to answer any and every question they happen to have for him. Julian winced. That hadn't even occurred to him, and as far as the Obsidian Order was concerned, there was no downside. Either Garak gave them useful information and then they killed him, or Garak didn't give them useful information and they kept trying to get it and killed him. But sir, he said, there's got to be something, a loophole, some kind of legal precedent. Sisko's mouth pressed into a line. I've got Dax looking, he said. Every Federation regulation, every treaty we've got with Cardassia. If there's a reason to turn them down that isn't going to cause a major diplomatic incident, we'll find it. Julian looked at him. But you don't think there is one, do you? I don't know, Sisko said firmly. But then he sighed again, spread his hands out on his desk, and added, But if there is, then I'm guessing the Cardassians knew about it before they made the request at all, and they've already got some kind of countermove lined up. His mouth twisted. For all we know, Dukat doesn't expect us to hand Garak over at all. He's hoping we'll refuse and give him an excuse to do whatever else he's got in mind. It was tempting for a moment to consider it, but... But if Garak had honestly thought that was an option, he wouldn't have been so awed, so quietly, bitterly resigned to the whole thing at launch. Julian had been too stunned to think it through, but Garak hadn't been. Of course Garak hadn't been. He'd have seen it in an instant, the whole picture. That the Federation couldn't afford to upset Cardassia, not when they were already struggling to hold the Alpha Quadrant together to face the Dominion, and that Garak, who wasn't a refugee or an asylum seeker, a victim of political persecution or state-sponsored violence, who was, officially, simply a tax-evading tailor, might not seem like a particularly high price to pay in order to maintain diplomatic relations at their current vaguely lukewarm level, when there were no fundamental Federation principles at stake. He'd known the odds, and knowing them, he'd decided that what he wanted to do was go and meet Julian for lunch. Something in Julian's chest contracted painfully. He made himself draw a breath and then blow it out again. Well, If Jadzia does find anything, or if she doesn't, I'd like to know. Of course, Sisko said. I'll keep you updated, Doctor. Thank you, sir, Julian said. He didn't have an excuse to linger. He hadn't had much of an excuse to come here in the first place. But he stood there for a moment anyway, and Sisko looked him in the eye and gave him a slow nod. The odds weren't on their side, that nod acknowledged. But that didn't mean they weren't going to try until every possible option had been exhausted. Even if Garak had given up on himself, Julian didn't have to. It wasn't a guarantee, wasn't a promise. It was a grim, stalwart, stubborn little spark of an idea. But it was enough. And when Julian left Sisko's office, he wasn't in shock anymore. He wasn't numb and desperate and disbelieving. He was thinking. He didn't stop thinking about it all night, picking over the puzzle of it. He couldn't let it go. In a way, it was exactly the thing his brain had been trained to do in medical school, coming to an understanding of the shape of a problem and working out a diagnosis, a course of treatment. Even if it was something rare, unusual, or presenting with wildly unpredictable symptoms, even if the treatment required to deal with it was going to be unorthodox. But that meant he recognized the feeling of it, too, when the pieces started sliding into place. When you'd finally worked out a cure that wasn't just a stopgap, wasn't just a desperate attempt to slow the symptoms. When you had an answer. He was up the next morning, well before a shift was meant to start. He got dressed and rushed straight to Garrick's shop, and he'd been hoping it would be open early, considering Garrick probably hadn't slept any better than Julian had, but it was still a jolt, a sudden nervous rush clenching up in his stomach to see that he was right, that Garrick was there. He went in, and Garrick looked up, and he met Garrick's eyes and blurted out, "Marry me." Garrick went still and blinked at him. "Well," Garrick said, very even and calm, measured. "How unexpected. And here it was my understanding that your people required the purchase of at least one dinner before..." "No, Garrick, I mean..." Julian shook his head, hurried to the counter where Garrick was standing, and took his arm. "That'll stop it, won't it? There needs to be a reason not to send you back to Cardassia, or at least to make it harder, to make it take longer. And if you were a Federation citizen, well, then there would be a reason to be careful. The Federation doesn't want to set that kind of precedent. And the quickest way to make you a Federation citizen is for a Federation citizen to marry you. And, I mean, you spend the most time with, it's, if it's going to be plausible that you've been, that there's anyone, then it's you," Garrick said for him. "Exactly," Julian said, relieved. "How strategic of you, my dear doctor," Garrick murmured. He hadn't moved, hadn't twisted out from under Julian's hand. He was, his shirt, the material of it, wasn't that thick, smooth and satiny beneath Julian's fingers. His arm was very warm. "Well," Julian said, and then stopped. He couldn't say it wasn't, because it was. It was strategic. It was logical. He'd made sure of it, thought it through as carefully as he could, to make sure it really did make sense, that it wasn't going to look as if he had any ulterior motive for suggesting it. As if he needed one when it was going to save Garrick. "Well," Garrick echoed after a moment, brow ridges high. "I suppose I can hardly refuse on principle. I should congratulate you, really. When I first met you, I suspect you'd have had rather strong words to say about anyone who'd suggest you ought to deceive Federation authorities." Julian bit down on a hysterical laugh and shook his head a little. "If I had a way to help you, and I knew I did, but I didn't use it," he said, "then I'd be as responsible for whatever happened to you when you went back as any Cardassian judicial official could ever be." "Ethically rigorous, as always, Doctor," Garrick said quietly, mouth slanting. But he didn't say anything else. He didn't object. He was just standing there, looking at Julian, eyes sharp and intent, face utterly unreadable. Then again, he didn't have any reason to object. It wasn't as if Julian's logic wasn't sound, and, well, Garrick had said it himself. He wasn't about to protest a maneuver that might well save his life on principle alone. He did whatever was necessary to gain an advantage, and always had. That was exactly what Julian was counting on. And sure enough, after a moment, Garrick looked Julian up and down, tilted his head a little, and said, "Well, all right. If you're sure." "I'm sure," Julian said. "Then how could I possibly refuse?" Garrick said, light. And that was a yes. It had to be. "Okay, then, well, I'll go tell Sisko where..." "Okay," Julian fumbled. And God, someone was coming in, traffic already starting to pick up on the promenade. He lifted his hand away from Garrick's sleeve, turned around and ducked past the customer coming in with a nod, and fled. Actually organizing the wedding was surprisingly easy. It seemed as if it shouldn't have been. as if something that was so life-changing, that was going to alter everything about Julian's existence so thoroughly, should have taken a bit more work to pull together. But it wasn't as if there were anyone that needed to be invited, or some sort of massive ceremony they needed to plan for. Civil marriage in the Federation was actually pretty streamlined, and the paperwork was simple. Julian was fairly sure it took more documentation to rename a shuttle. Sisko gave him a sharp, skeptical look when Julian went to tell him what they were doing, but Julian stuck it out, didn't let himself falter, and there were any dozen representatives of various species on the station who could have presided over it to make it valid, but Sisko didn't make him go and ask one by one. He shook Julian's hand and asked whether they'd picked a date, and that was that. It wasn't going to be a big deal. Neither of them were inclined to make it a big deal. Clearing out a conference room for half an hour, with Dax there as a witness, was pretty much going to cover it, Julian figured. But somehow, well, somehow word spread, which Julian could grant it usually managed to do, on the station, and when Julian actually arrived at the conference room on the day, it was packed. Nearly everyone he knew, except a handful who had to be on duty, and quite a few people he didn't, patients he'd seen once or twice at the most. It was strange, stepping into that room, looking at all those faces. It was stranger still, having to clear his throat and walk forward, up to where Garrick, of all people, was waiting for him. Julian had been determined to avoid making a spectacle out of this whole thing, to refuse to be an idiot about it. The one concession he'd made was to dig out his old dress uniform. Classic 2360s, black shoulders, and science blue the rest of the way down, with the longer tunic that went down the thighs. It wasn't like the new dress uniforms, sharp, bright white. Just enough of a difference that he would know, even if most of his patients for the day wouldn't notice. Just enough of a difference that Garrick would notice, probably. And Garrick... Garrick seemed to have gone about the same route. He wasn't wearing anything ostentatious, hadn't secretly fitted himself for some kind of massive white wedding gown, but it was. The fabric had a bit of a shimmer to it, and it was a deep, jewel-toned green that Garrick had always seemed to favor, and Julian was fairly certain he'd never seen Garrick in a shirt with a neckline that scooped quite that far, open in a curve that cut across the collarbones, clean geometry in the shoulders, and the subtle flaring angle that some kind of Cardassian waistcoat or something was giving to his waist. Julian couldn't stop looking at him. Which was great, because anything that kept his mind off what he was actually doing was a gift. The wedding part went fast. It barely seemed like any time at all, really. Rings were optional and didn't mean much of anything to Cardassians, but Julian felt like he ought to do something. He took Garrick's hands, and then he was stuck with it, standing there with Garrick's fingers closed between his, hoping dimly that his palms weren't sweating too much, as Sisko's voice rolled past them, saying extremely important words Julian could barely hear. He did at least manage to figure out when to say, "I do," and even got it out without his voice cracking too badly. And Garrick repeated it calmly after him, and then Sisko held out the pad. Their IDs, the license, everything was there, and they each signed it in turn, pressed a thumbprint to it alongside as personal certification, and it was done. It wasn't much, but Julian could hear Jadzia cheer, Miles joining in, and then the whole room going up, clapping and whistling. Somebody who wasn't Kira was some kind of jingling Bajoran tambourine, and it was... It felt real, suddenly. It felt real. And Julian stood there next to Garrick and wished distantly that Sisko had chosen to keep it classic, old-school 2100s, had said it, "You may kiss," and given him the excuse he couldn't give himself. The logistics were a little bit more difficult. It wasn't required, technically, for them to move into the same quarters. Federation restrictions and expectations about the corollaries accompanying marriage weren't very stringent, but there wasn't any reason not to, either. It wasn't as if Julian would mind the larger quarters, and there was a part of him that couldn't help but like the idea of it. Not only had he found a way to protect Garrick, a way to keep Garrick from being taken away, but he was going to get to live with the proof of it. Garrick, right there, in front of him, all the time. Garrick seemed utterly unsurprised, talking it over during their impromptu reception in Quark's afterward, when Julian told him about the quarters, that they might as well take them if Garrick didn't mind doing it. "Oh, naturally," he said, and then, incomprehensibly, "I'm sure it's much easier to set up everything in advance in one place than to infiltrate both our individual quarters separately without our noticing. Tell me, my dear, what sort of surveillance should we be expecting?" "What?" Julian said blankly. Garrick arched his brow ridges. "Why, surely the implications of our exceptionally convenient timing won't have escaped your superiors. They won't have escaped my people, I assure you, and I can only imagine the measures the Obsidian Order has in mind to evaluate the situation. The speed of all this may have taken them by surprise, but that won't last long. I realize the Federation is inclined to be bizarrely trusting about these things in comparison, but..." No, Julian said. "No, of course not. We aren't going to be surveilled. We..." He stopped, swallowing, abruptly aware of a certain heat beginning to climb into his face. "We're married," he said anyway, after a moment, as firm as he could make it. "It's done. The Federation's had to adapt to all sorts of species, all sorts of traditions and behaviors when it comes to what it means to be married, and they can't just decide we aren't married because we haven't done one thing or another. That's not how it works, not anymore. And the timing doesn't make it fraud, either."
"Doesn't it?" Garrick said, mild, inquiring.
"No, why would it? It just makes sense." "As if," Julian added, "I'd just sit back and let you get extradited to Cardassia if we were together. If I'd been thinking about it at all, if it were on my mind getting married to you, then I'd do it right then, right away. I'd do anything you needed me to do if it would keep you safe." He stopped and bit his tongue, too late to save him. He stared down into the drink in front of him because there was no way in hell he could look at Garrick now, because, of course, that was exactly what he was doing. He and Garrick weren't together, hadn't been at all before this, and yet Julian was doing it, had done it. Every single thing he'd just said he'd have done if he were in love with Garrick, and there was no way Garrick was going to miss that fact.
"Ah," Garrick said after a moment, so quiet compared to the wave of cheers coming from the Dabo tables that Julian almost didn't catch it.
"Well, good to know. In that case, my dear, shall we go get our things?"
Julian blinked and risked a glance. Garrick was looking back at him, one brow ridge arched with perfect equanimity.
Yes, Julian managed. "Of course."
They did. Julian caught a fair bit of hell from Miles for it, sneaking away from his own wedding reception to go move quarters, when he ought to have been getting drunk and letting Miles beat him at darts and having the time of his life. But he was fairly certain he'd made the right decision. Getting drunk around Garrick was clearly a bad idea. It had been already, and it was an even worse one now that he'd... God, now that he'd gone and married Garrick. He'd always been fascinated by Garrick. He'd always been intrigued by Garrick, and even interested in Garrick, which in retrospect might well have been in more than one meaning of the word, long before he'd actually learned to like Garrick, too. Garrick had been so different from anyone else he'd ever met when he'd first come to the station, so intimidating and oddly charming, so difficult to understand. And making friends with Garrick hadn't done anything to change that, had, on the contrary, only ever made it worse. But it hadn't been that hard to ignore it, either. For all their lunches, all their casual conversations, he hadn't, strictly speaking, spent that much time with Garrick in the greater scheme of things. But now... Well, he'd said it himself, hadn't he? He'd thought it with such blithe satisfaction that he was going to get to live with the proof that he'd pulled this off, and that proof was going to be Garrick, right in front of him, all the time. They worked around each other easily. They had no trouble fitting their belongings into their new, larger quarters together. There was no reason to delay, no need for either of them to hold off on moving in after all until some space could be cleared or some argument resolved. It was just as peculiarly simple as getting married had been, and just as impossibly disorienting a change. They were living in the same quarters. They were sleeping in the same bed, a thousand times worse. There were no boundaries crossed, they never touched each other, but it didn't matter at all. Julian was relentlessly, terribly aware of it. Of the weight of Garrick against the mattress, the soft scuffing sound his scales made against the sheets, the sigh of his breath, and the shifting of his hair across his pillow. He saw Garrick every day. Every morning, every evening. Garrick in every possible state of being. Asleep, which had always been oddly hard to imagine when Garrick was always so sharp, so attentive when he was awake. Disheveled in the morning, with his nightclothes loose and rumpled. Reading in the evening and absently nursing a glass of canard. And the way he felt about Garrick was inescapable, like this. It wasn't something he could push down, it wasn't something he could forget about, it wasn't something he could pretend he hadn't noticed. It was there, relentless, pressing, lodged between his ribs, a slow, aching weight contracting his heart by degrees, and he didn't know how he was going to survive it. They decided from the start that they were going to keep having lunch together. Garrick had claimed the neatness of it suited him. It was the best way to continuously remind the entire rest of the station that they were married now, to go about being married in front of everyone. At the same time, that it wasn't going to look as if they were trying to continuously remind the entire rest of the station that they were married, because they were only maintaining a routine they'd already enjoyed. Julian had agreed, relieved that Garrick had some kind of rationale for it, simply because he wouldn't have liked to stop. It was idiotic, obviously. He had Garrick to himself so often these days, so much more than he'd ever have imagined a year or two ago. Whenever Garrick's interest in him seemed to have waned, frankly, or when Zial had come to the station, when Garrick had finally had someone other than Julian to talk to. But apparently his own quiet greed knew no bounds, and Garrick seemed not to have tired of him completely just yet. Or at least he thought so, until the day he walked into the Replimat and saw that there was already someone sitting down across from Garrick. A Cardassian. Zial, he thought at first, but then he realized it wasn't. The hair was cropped much too short, and the scales along the neck too pronounced, the shade of skin not quite right. A Cardassian, a man, leaning in close over the table toward Garrick with a smile, and, as Julian drew closer, he understood that the man was putting forward some sort of argument. Closer still, and it became clear it was a very specific sort of argument.
"Sweat, don't they?"
"Indeed they do," Garrick murmured.
"And the skin, I hear it's very fragile, too," the Cardassian said, coaxing. "They simply can't handle being bitten properly, poor feeble things."
Garrick smiled at him, but it wasn't. There was amusement in it, but no warmth. None of that sharp, teasing heat that drew Julian in so readily whenever Garrick chose to deploy it. Garrick looked at the man knowingly, a little pityingly, with that vague condescension that said it simply wasn't worth his time to argue the point. And seeing that look on his face, every foolish, sinking fear that had been tightening Julian's gut dissolved in an instant.
"If you say so," Garrick allowed, in tones of mild disinterest. "But I can't claim I've had any complaints in the time I've been with my husband."
"Really?" the Cardassian pressed. And it was then, only then, as Julian rounded the next table, that Garrick's eyes cut past the Cardassian's shoulder and found him. Of course, he might have known Julian was there all along, might have noticed the moment Julian had come into the room, but there was an unforced quality to the way Garrick's expression changed. the sudden, intent light that came into his face that made Julian dare to think, perhaps, that really was the first moment Garrick had realized he was there.
"There you are, my dear," Garrick said.
"Here I am," Julian agreed, and then he was standing beside the table. But Garrick caught his hand before he could pull out a chair, took it, and drew it in and brushed his mouth across Julian's knuckles for a moment. "And all right," thought the part of Julian that wasn't struck breathless by it. That was a cue. Garrick had been talking to this Cardassian as if he and Julian weren't just sleeping together, but sleeping together, and now he was kissing Julian's hand. He'd do the former to brush off someone he wasn't interested in, but probably not the latter, and that meant that wasn't what this was. Obsidian Order, then. Or maybe just an informant, whether this Cardassian fellow knew that was what he was or not. Maybe he'd run into someone on the promenade who'd bet him he couldn't get Garrick into bed, and when he admitted to them that he'd lost that bet, it would only seem natural for them to ask why, to sympathize with his bad luck and buy him a drink for trying. But either way, Garrick was telling Julian how they ought to play this, and Julian wasn't going to ignore that. It was a reasonable thing to do, he thought. He was the one who was still standing, the one for whom the movement required was going to be natural, and Garrick wouldn't have wanted to surprise him with it, would have erred on the side of caution rather than put Julian in a position where he might instinctively jerk away before Garrick could stop him. But Julian didn't need to worry about the same thing, not with Garrick, not when Garrick was already engaged in playing a part with such perfect control of himself. So, as Garrick's face lifted away from his hand again, as Garrick raised it to look at him, Julian reached out with the other hand and touched Garrick's jaw. Half a second's warning, before he leaned in and down, tipped Garrick's chin up higher still, and pressed his mouth to Garrick's. He didn't do anything stupid. Not more stupid than doing it at all, anyway. He did it, and he kept it brief, intent but close-mouthed, a firm, hot touch that only lingered a little before he let it break. And then he drew his hand away again, pulled out the chair and sat down, and smiled at the other Cardassian, distantly grateful for the excuse not to look at Garrick for a second. "Hello, I don't believe we've met." The Cardassian eyed him coolly and sat back. He was making a show of it. How thoroughly at ease he was, how unthreatened by Julian. "No," he agreed, "I don't believe we have." And then he fell silent, clearly unwilling to actually remedy that lack with an introduction. "Well," Julian said, "I should thank you for keeping Garrick company." And he kept his tone warm, amiable, but he'd chosen his words carefully. He wasn't expressing any actual gratitude, only observing that he ought to, and if anyone would appreciate the distinction between those two things, it was a Cardassian. Just to drive the point home, Julian allowed the silence to stretch for a beat, still smiling, and then he screwed his courage to the sticking place and made himself flick a glance toward Garrick without allowing the smile to falter. "Sorry I was late." Garrick was looking at him with perhaps a little extra sharpness. But the expression on his face hadn't changed, hadn't lost that bloom of sweet, subtle warmth that had come into it the moment he'd seen Julian coming. If he was irritated with Julian for pushing his pretense too far, he was hiding it very well. "Not at all, darling," he said quietly. "Your timing is, as always, excellent." "A little too excellent, I hear," the Cardassian said. Julian looked at him again and smiled wider still. "If you have something to say, then by all means say it. If you don't, then I think perhaps it's time you left us to our lunch." The Cardassian gave him a narrow-eyed, assessing stare, and then clearly decided it was time to try another tack. "How much do you even know about your dear husband, A fine, upstanding Starfleet officer like you? Have you any idea of the things he's done, the crimes he's committed?" "I know enough," Julian said pleasantly. "And I can promise you right now that there's nothing you could possibly tell me that could change the way I feel about him, and anyone who tries to take him from the station against his will is going to have to do it over my dead body." The Cardassian's lip curled. "Truly a threat to make anyone think twice." "Oh, I'm aware that won't constitute much of a barrier," Julian agreed.
What I'm trying to tell you is that you, or anyone else, will have to kill me to get to him. I'll make sure of it. And even if you do it perfectly, even if you're able to dispose of my corpse without leaving any evidence, I'm the ranking medical officer here. My disappearance won't cause any less of a disturbance than my grisly murder would. There's no way you're going to be able to cover it up well enough to prevent a formal investigation by Starfleet. Even if they might not have cared about Garrick, they're going to care about me. And whatever it is you're going to do next, you should probably keep that in mind. The Cardassian didn't say anything for a long moment. Julian kept smiling at him, and became dimly aware that Garrick's knee was pressed to his beneath the table, that Garrick had covered his nearer hand where it lay at rest on the table, that Garrick's fingers were curled tightly around his, Garrick's thumb moving in a slow, steady arc across his knuckles. "You deserve each other," the Cardassian muttered at last with a scoff, and then he shook his head and stood and walked away. The Replimat was full. There were people all around them, talking, laughing, carrying on. But in between the two of them at the table, the silence seemed to stretch. And then Garrick squeezed Julian's hand just a little and said quietly, "Tell me, my dear, have I mentioned how deeply I appreciate your intermittent but glorious displays of perspicacity?" Julian huffed half a breath through his nose. "Not recently, I don't think," he said, only a little unsteadily. "You didn't need to do that, you know," Garrick murmured. Julian looked at him. "Yes, I did." Garrick was looking back at him, watching him with a perfectly pleasant, gently fond expression and sharp, searching eyes. "Not that I'm not grateful for your assistance, of course," he allowed after a moment, "but I'd hate to think you should come to regret your efforts." God, what the hell was that supposed to mean? Was he honestly expecting Julian to wake up one morning and discover he was sorry he hadn't let Garrick be dragged home to be executed? Or did he mean, what, deliberately antagonizing someone who was probably working for the Obsidian Order? The kissing? Or the all of it? Sharing quarters, a bed with Garrick, or even marrying Garrick in the first place? Not that it mattered, Julian thought distantly. Because, whichever it was, the answer was going to be the same. He shut his eyes. Garrick was still touching his hand, a gentle, unforced clasp of his fingers, and Julian turned his hand over beneath it, gripped Garrick's palm far too tightly, and made himself say, "You don't understand. My dear, you don't understand anything," Julian repeated, hoarse. "God, Garrick, this is the most selfish thing I've ever done. This, all of it. When I came over here, when you took my hand the way you did, I knew I could get away with it. I knew you'd decided it was assistance." And he said it deliberately, echoed Garrick's own choice of words. He couldn't look, couldn't make himself open his eyes, but he could hear the catch in Garrick's breath, the barest, startled pressure of Garrick's fingers, and knew Garrick had understood. "I could kiss you, and you'd let me, and I'd get to have done it, to tuck it away somewhere and keep it forever. Getting to marry you, to help you, to live with you and share space with you, to keep you." He couldn't keep going. He couldn't figure out what to say, how to say it, how to make Garrick understand just how terribly self-centered, how manipulative it had all been. But Garrick didn't let the silence stretch, didn't sit there and allow the sinking weight of it to settle on Julian the way he deserved. "Goodness," he said, very softly. "How shockingly Cardassian of you, my dear." And Julian had to look at him then, bewildered, frustrated. Teasing, when he just said, "Didn't Garrick understand that he meant it?" "Garrick." "Ah." Garrick tilted his head, gaze intent. "You think you've confessed to some dreadful flaw, is that it? As if there were any higher compliment you could have given me than to admit you'd do anything it took to have whatever you could get of me for as long as you could get it.
And it should have been a condemnation, Julian felt sure, but Garrick said it in such a tone, low and warm and pleased. It sounded like anything but. "Garrick," he said again, helplessly. And then Garrick reached across the table, slid two knuckles beneath his chin, and tipped his face up just a little, and kissed him. Not the way Julian had done it before, with the other Cardassian watching them. Not measured, not restrained. Garrick held him there, used that touch against his chin, a thumb against his jaw, to coax his mouth open. Kissed him deeply, sweetly, lingering over it as if there were no reason not to, as if they were alone in a room somewhere and had nothing else to do today, instead of in the middle of the Replimat with an afternoon shift to get to. And Julian shut his eyes, clung to Garrick's other hand with all the greedy desperation he'd ever tried to hide, and kissed back. "You know," Garrick said against his cheek when it was over, "that operative is probably bugging our quarters right this very moment, if you'd care to assist me a little more this evening." Julian snorted, unable to stop it, eyes hot with relief. But he shook his head after, pressed his temple to Garrick's and said, "No, Garrick, that's what I'm telling you. I don't need a reason. I never did. If you want this, me, then all you have to do is ask." Garrick drew a slow breath and let it out. "A far greater challenge, my dear," he said at last, unsteady, in Julian's ear. "But in that case," and then, softer, strained and uncertain, "please?" "Yes," Julian said. "Yes." And God, they'd done everything in the wrong order entirely. Getting married first, kissing second, asking a question and getting a yes last. But like this, now, sitting here, clutching Garrick's hand like a madman, half dizzy with happiness, he knew he'd never convince himself to regret it. The end.